Chapter 29. Birmingham. Hey, cat. And with this Mr. Hayes made a motion, as if he would seize his wife's hand, but she flung his back again. Coward, said she, you want liquor to give you courage, and then you've only heart enough to strike women. It was only in self-defense, my dear, said Hayes, whose courage had all gone. Who tried, you know, to stab you, and I wish I had, said Mrs. Hayes, setting her teeth, and glaring at him like a demon, and so saying she sprung out of bed. There was a great stain of blood on her pillow. Look at it, said she. Had lots of your shedding. And at this Hayes fairly began to weep, so utterly downcast and frightened was the miserable man. The wretch's tears only inspired his wife with a still greater rage and loathing. She cared not so much for the blow, but she hated the man. The man to whom she was tied forever, forever. The bar between her and wealth, happiness, love, rank perhaps. If I were free, thought Mrs. Hayes, the thought had been sitting at her pillow all night, and whispering ceaselessly into her ear, if I were free, Max would marry me, I know he would. He said so yesterday. Asterisk, 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 as if by a kind of intuition, old Wood seemed to read all this woman's thoughts. For he said that day with a sneer, that he would wager she was thinking, how much better it would be, to be a count's lady than a poor miser's wife. And ye faith, said he, a count and a chariot and six is better than an old skinflint with a cudgel. And then he asked her, if her head was better, and supposed that she was used to beating, and cut sundry other jokes, which made the poor wretch's wounds of mind and body feel a thousand times sorer. Tom, too, was made acquainted with the dispute, and swore his accustomed vengeance against his stepfather. Such feelings, Wood, with a dexterous malice, would never let rest. It was his joy, at first quite a disinterested one, to goad Catherine, and to frighten Hayes. Though, in truth, that unfortunate creature had no occasion for incitements from without to keep up the dreadful state of terror and depression into which he had fallen. For, from the morning after the quarrel, the horrible words and looks of Catherine never left Hayes's memory, but a cold fear followed him, a dreadful prescience. He strove to overcome this fate as a coward would, to kneel to it for compassion, to coax and wheedle it into forgiveness. He was slavishly gentle to Catherine, and bore her fierce taunts with mean resignation. He trembled before young Billings, who was now established in the house, his mother said, to protect her against the violence of her husband, and suffered his brutal language and conduct without venturing to resist. The young man and his mother lorded over the house. Hayes hardly dared to speak in their presence, seldom sat with the family except at meals, but slipped away to his chamber. He slept apart now from his wife, or passed the evening at the public house, where he was constrained to drink to spend some of his beloved sixpences for drink. And, of course, the neighbors began to say, John Hayes neglects his wife. He tyrannizes over her, and beats her. Always at the public house, leaving an honest woman alone at home. The unfortunate wretch did not hate his wife. He was used to her, fond of her as much as he could be fond, sighed to be friends with her again, repeatedly would creep, whimpering, to Wood's room, when the latter was alone, and begged him to bring about a reconciliation. They were reconciled, as much as ever they could be. The woman looked at him, thought what she might be but for him, and scorned and loathed him with a feeling that almost amounted to insanity. What nights she lay awake, weeping, and cursing herself and him. His humility and beseeching looks only made him more despicable and hateful to her. If Hayes did not hate the mother, however, he hated the boy, hated, and feared him dreadfully. He would have poisoned him if he had had the courage, but he dared not. He dared not even look at him as he sat there, the master of the house, in insolent triumph. Oh God! How the lad's brutal laughter rung in Hayes's ears, and how the stare of his fierce bold black eyes pursued him. Of a truth, if Mr. Wood loved mischief, as he did, honestly and purely for mischief's sake, he He had enough here. There was mean malice, and fierce scorn, and black revenge, and sinful desire, boiling up in the hearts of these wretched people, enough to content Mr. Wood's great master himself. Hayes's business, as we have said, was nominally that of a carpenter, but since, for the last few years, he had added to it that of a lender of money, the carpenter's trade had been neglected altogether for one, so much more profitable. Mrs. Hayes had exerted herself, with much benefit to her husband, in his usurious business. She was a resolute, clear-sighted, keen woman, that did not love money, but loved to be rich, and push her way in the world. She would have nothing to do with the trade now, however, and told her husband to manage it himself. She felt that she was separated from him forever, and could no more be brought to consider her interests as connected with his own. The man was well fitted for the creeping and niggling of his dastardly trade, and gathered his monies, and busied himself with his lawyer, and acted as his own bookkeeper and clerk, not without satisfaction. His wife's speculations, when they worked in concert, used often to frighten him. He never sent out his capital without a pang, and only because he dared not question her superior judgment and will. He began now to lend no more. He could not let the money out of his sight. His sole pleasure was to creep up into his room, uncount and recount it. When Billings came into the house, Hayes had taken a room next to that of Wood. It was a protection to him, for Wood would often rebuke the lad for using Hayes ill, and both Catherine and Tom treated the old man with deference. At last it was after he had collected a good deal of his money Hayes began to reason with himself, why should I stay? Stay to be insulted by that boy, or murdered by him. He is ready for any crime. He determined to fly. He would send Catherine money every year. No, as he had the furniture, let her let lodgings, that would support her. He would go, and live away, abroad in some cheap place away from that boy and his horrible threats. The idea of freedom was agreeable to the poor wretch, and he began to wind up his affairs as quickly as he could. Hayes would now allow no one to make his bed or enter his room, and Wood could hear him through the panels fidgeting perpetually to and fro, opening and shutting of chests, and clinking of coin. At the least sound he would start up, and would go to Billings' door and listen. Wood used to hear him creeping through the passages, and returning stealthily to his own chamber. One day the woman and her son had been angrily taunting him in the presence of a neighbor. The neighbor retired soon, and Hayes, who had gone with him to the door, heard, on returning, the voice of Wood in the parlor. The old man laughed in his usual saturnine way, and said, "Have a care, Mrs. Cat, for if Hayes were to die suddenly, by the laws, the neighbors would accuse thee of his death." Hayes started as if he had been shot. "He too is in the plot," thought he. "They are all leagued against me. They will kill me. They are only biding their time." Fear seized him, and he thought of flying, that instant and leaving all, and he stole into his room, and gathered his money together. But only a half of it was there. In a few weeks all would have come in. He had not the heart to go. But that night Wood heard Hayes pause at his door, before he went to listen at Mrs. Catherine's. "What is the man thinking of?" said Wood. "He is gathering his money together. Has he a hoard yonder unknown to us all?" Wood thought he would watch him. There was a closet between the two rooms. Wood bored a hole in the panel, and peeped through. Hayes had a brace of pistols, and four or five little bags before him on the table. One of these he opened, and placed, one by one, 25 guineas into it. Such a sum had been due, that day Catherine spoke of it only in the morning, for the debtor's name had by chance been mentioned in the conversation. Hayes commonly kept but a few guineas in the house. For what was he amassing all these? The next day, Wood asked for change for a 20-pound bill. Hayes said he had but 3 guineas. And, when asked by Catherine where the money was that was paid the day before, said that it was at the banker's. "He man is going to fly," said Wood. "That is sure. If he does, I know him, he will leave his wife without a shilling. He watched him for several days regularly. Two or three more bags were added to the former number. They are pretty things, guineas, thought Wood, until no tails, like bank bills. And he thought over the days when he and McShane used to ride abroad in search of them. I don't know what thoughts entered into Mr. Wood's brain, but the next day, after seeing young Billings, to whom he actually made a present of a guinea, that young man, in conversing with his mother, said, "Do you know, mother, that if you were free and married the Count, I should be a lord? It's the German law, Mr. Wood says, and you know he was in them countries with Marlborough." "Eh, that he would," said Mr. Wood, "in Germany. But Germany isn't England, and it's no use talking of such things." "Hush, child," said Mrs. Hayes, quite eagerly. "How can I marry the Count? Besides, aren't I married, and isn't he too great a lord for me?" "Too great a lord? Not a whit, mother. If it wasn't for Hayes, I might be a lord now. He gave me 5 guineas only last week, but curse the skinflint who never will part with a shilling. It's not so bad as his striking your mother, Tom. I had my stick up, and was ready to fell him t'other night," added Mr. Wood. And herewith he smiled, and looked steadily in Mrs. Catherine's face. She dared not look again, but she felt that the old man knew a secret that as he had been trying to hide from herself. Fool! He knew it, and Hayes knew it dimly. And never, never, since that day of the gala, had it left her, sleeping or waking. When Hayes, in his fear, had proposed to sleep away from her, she started with joy. As he had been afraid that she might talk in her sleep, and so let slip her horrible confession. Old Wood knew all her history since the period of the Marylebone fate. He had wormed it out of her, day by day. He had counseled her how to act, warned her not to yield, to procure, at least, a certain provision for her son, and a handsome settlement for herself, if she determined on quitting her husband. The old man looked on the business in a proper philosophical light, told her bluntly that he saw she was bent upon going off with the Count, and bade her take precautions, else she might be left as he had been before. Catherine denied all these charges, but she saw the Count daily, notwithstanding, and took all the measures which Wood had recommended to her. They were very prudent ones. Galgenstein grew hourly more in love. Never had he felt such a flame, not in the best days of his youth, not for the fairest princess, countess, or actress, from Vienna to Paris. At length it was the night, after he had seen Hayes counting his money bags, old Wood spoke to Mrs. Hayes very seriously. "That husband of yours, Cat," said he, "meditates some treason, eh, and fancies we are about such. He listens nightly at your door and at mine. He is going to leave you, be sure on't, and if he leaves you, he leaves you to starve." "I can be rich elsewhere," said Mrs. Cat. "What, with Max?" "Eh, with Max. And why not?" said Mrs. Hayes. "Why not, fool? Do you recollect Birmingham? Do you think that Galgenstein, who is so tender now, because he hasn't won you, will be faithful because he has? Sa, woman, men are not made so. Don't go to him until you are sure. If you were a widow now, he would marry you, but never leave yourself at his mercy. If you were to leave your husband to go to him, he would desert you in a fortnight. She might have been a countess, she knew she might, but for this cursed barrier between her and her fortune." Wood knew what she was thinking of, and smiled grimly. "Besides," he continued, "remember, Tom. As sure as you leave Hayes without some security from Max, the boy's ruined. He who might be a lord, if his mother had but saw. Never mind. That boy will go on the road, as sure as my name's Wood. He's a Turpin cock in his eye, my dear, a regular Tyburn look. He knows too many of that sort already, and is too fond of a bottle and a girl to resist, and be honest when it comes to the pinch." "It's all true," said Mrs. Hayes. Om's a high meddlesome fellow, and would no more mind a ride on Hounslow Heath than he does a walk now in the mall. Do you want him hanged, my dear? Said Wood. Ah, doctor. It is a pity, and that's sure, concluded Mr. Wood, knocking the ashes out of his pipe, and closing this interesting conversation. It is a pity that that old skinflint should be in the way of both your fortunes, and he about to fling you over to. Mrs. Catherine retired musing, as Mr. Billings had previously done. A sweet smile of contentment lighted up the venerable features of Dr. Wood, and he walked abroad into the streets as happy a fellow as any in London. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.